E. Casey Foundation.
And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Engelhardt. And you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. I hope you'll be with us for the next hour and that you just keep your dial tuned to 88.5 or your computer, wherever it is that you listen. I hope you heard Elizabeth Warren last night.
Oh, my goodness.
Rachel's show on MSNBC.
You know, it was totally a breath of fresh air. Elizabeth Warren has dedicated her life to the corruption and the capitulation of so many politicians to very big money and big money interests, which are not the same as our interests. And it was just such a breath of fresh air to hear someone really going at it. And I know a really good friend of mine, and we were talking, golly, this had to be 8 or 9 years ago with Barack Obama still in office, and she and I both agreed if we could just really straighten out the economic disparity and the attitudes behind the inequality in this country, that actually pretty much everything else would follow in a far more logical and a possible situation. So, yes, it was. And what a day. At noon, Nancy Pelosi is going to be sworn in for the second time. And we're in the new year. The government is partially shut down. What can I say? anyway, but before we get into the real show, let's play this little promo, and then we will get started.
WMNF means more than great music and independent news. WMNF means business. To learn how your business can sponsor a program on WMNF at rates that will work for you, contact Laura Taylor at 813-238-8001 or email laura@wmnf.org.
And today we're gonna have an interview with Jackie Speier. I was able to interview Jackie Speier yesterday, you know, the congresswoman from the 14th District in California, and her incredible career. Because, you know, particularly in the House, we have such an interesting amalgam of women. Not only women, of course, they're still sadly quite the majority. And I've over, as Jackie Speier points out in her book, Undaunted, that of the 12,000 plus people who have served in Congress in our history, only 237 of them have been women. And so it's hardly a women dominated Congress. But I think some of the most exciting new members are women, and we will follow them with great interest. But they will be combined with the pros, you might say, like the Nancy Pelosi's, like the Jackie Speier's, and it will really be interesting because to me, I think particularly with all the dismay with politics and the loss of any hope, that we could really see, you know, kind of progressive progress in the sense of actually give and take discussion and both sides trying to compromise to do something best for the people, that I think most of us have given up hope that this can even happen. And if it can, it's got to happen now. In other words, if it doesn't, then I'm not quite sure what direction we are going. And so it should be a really, really interesting years coming up. So hang on to your hats. But I can't resist playing this. Yesterday, Nancy Pelosi's daughter, Alexandra Pelosi, is a pretty outspoken documentary filmmaker, and she was being interviewed on CNN. And so let's just give a little listen to Nancy's daughter, Alexandra Pelosi.
One of the people who raised you. But if you can tell us what Speaker Pelosi thinks about going
John,
in.
We have known you for 2 decades. Do you think I'm the person that's going to come on CNN and talk about my mother? Is that who you think I am?
I'm asking you, you are a fantastic political reporter. How does she approach meetings with President Trump, A, and B, just what are your feelings about this person who you know quite well becoming Speaker of the House for a second time?
She'll cut your head off and you won't even know you're bleeding. That's all you need to know about her. No one ever won betting against Nancy Pelosi. She's persevered. You got to give her credit. No matter what you think of her, you have to give her credit because she was, think about it. Think about all those presidents she's endured, right? She was the Bush, the Clinton, you know, she's been through it all. So she's been around. This is not her first rodeo, as your friend George Bush would say. So she knows what she's doing. And that should make you sleep at night, knowing that at least somebody in this town knows what they're doing.
And how do you feel, given that this person whom you just said will cut off your neck and you won't even know you're bleeding, will be the Speaker of the House for a second time tomorrow?
Well, I think it says a lot about what, if you look out into the crowd, who you're going to see in that crowd. It's not just her. Think of all those women you're going to see. It's going to be, you know, when Nancy Pelosi came to town, it was a boys' club. That was 30 years ago. It was a boys' club. Look around tomorrow. It's going to be a whole new America. You're going to see something so magical that you have not seen before. I think I know Trump gets all the attention and his wall and his, but if you think about it, when you think about how this country is changing fundamentally, when you look at who's representing us, it's going to be a beautiful menagerie. Is that even a word?
Yeah, yes,
I think it is.
Well played.
It's going to be, my 12-year-old will be proud. I got that off the 12 words every middle schooler should know. It's going to be a beautiful America, and I think we should all be proud of that. And we should just take one moment to exhale and say, we should be really proud of ourselves because we have a beautiful looking Congress.
All right, Alexandra.
I hope so. I hope we do have a beautiful-looking Congress, but I'm more concerned with what that beautiful-looking Congress does. I think that, you know, when it comes to women, we have learned a long, long time ago that if we really want something done, you have to do it yourself. And you can expect to be belittled, you can be expected to be questioned, and you can expect all kinds of things. And, you know, that, as I say, you know, today, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the youngest member of Congress, will be sworn in with her other female colleagues and all the other new members in the House. And Nancy Pelosi will take over the reins again. And, you know, that Nancy Pelosi's background is really fascinating. And in this time, really, when we've been looking and we've all been hammered, I mean, talk about the bully in the playground, or you might say the predator at the workplace, who isn't necessarily sexual harassment, but real harassment, that this bully will totally dominate the workforce. Well, kind of all of us have put up with that with Trump. You know, this guy has totally dominated the headlines. We absolutely have to tiptoe around him and hope to heaven's name that he doesn't do something really untoward internationally to get us in all kinds of trouble. And actually, if you really look at it, that it's always difficult to deal with a dysfunctional member, whether it's in a family or a workplace or a community. They are difficult, and more often than not, they will kind of set the rules of the game, and you've really got to figure out a totally new strategy how to deal with them. And I'm not sure this Congress will be up to it. I can only hope so. But all I know is that if I wanted someone that could handle a dysfunctional, overgrown child who really is used to getting his way one way or the other, I think I'd rather put my fate in the hands of a mother and a grandmother. I really think that she has had a lot of experience with temper tantrums and aged bullies, you might say. And I think with this present time, we just have to realize that women are just going to have to deal with it themselves. to pod this down, and we are certainly sending all the very best wishes we can to all of our new sisters, particularly in Congress, but also to our brothers there, because I really think it's going to take everything we can do. And I'm really going to be watching with great interest already, you know, Nancy Pelosi, you know, because with the deficit and the kind of austerity politics we have had for years now, that really the basic problem has been totally, as Norquist and others have been so pursuant in doing, you know, totally starving the government and shrinking it to the size of the bathtub and then pulling the plug. And while the very rich get so obscenely rich, so many people, pretty much from the middle class on down, are really struggling just to keep in place. And, you know, that this kind of austerity politics, that everything has to be fit or there has to be cuts, with no, absolutely, almost if you bring it up, it's almost as if you have committed blasphemy, that we have to increase revenue. Revenue from the people that are not paying their fair share, and not only that, have pretty much the economic policies of this government totally skidding, greasing their rails, so to speak. And so it was a delight, as Arlene said, to hear Elizabeth Warren, who has fought this for so long, in fact, most of her life. But also I'm thinking of one like Jackie Speier, who has been a member of Congress now for 20 years from the 14th District in California. And, you know, I have mainly followed Jackie Speier with her actions in Congress because she's been a fierce advocate for women. She has really fought against harassment, sexual harassment, in other words, in the military, but also in Congress. You know, when in 15, actually, that she went after Me Too Congress. And I must admit, I did not know that before it was so difficult for any staffer or any member of Congress to bring a charge of sexual harassment against a congressional delegate. I did not realize that before the woman could make her complaint, number one, she had to agree to mediation with her accuser for a month, and then she had to agree for another month to totally think it over, and then if she still wanted to pursue it, she had another month that she had to go through arbitration. So after 3 months of her constantly being put on the line, then she could finally make the complaint against a congressperson. Well, is there any wonder that none of the complaints were being handled? And this is one of the many things I learned about Jackie Speier, really researching this book and doing it. But I don't know how much you know about the Jonestown Massacre. I knew that it was terrible. I knew a little bit about the People's Temple. And I knew Congressman Ryan was killed. And most of the people there were killed, including NBC cameramen and photographers, et cetera. But I really didn't know all of Jackie Speier's involvement and the nearly fatal wound. She suffered 5 point-blank wounds from an assault rifle. And how she survived is, frankly, nothing short of a miracle. And so, without further ado, let's go into the interview with Jackie Speier. And we mainly talked about her book. I would have loved to have talked about a lot of the political issues, but this book, and it's called Undaunted. And it's not only Undaunted, but it's Surviving Jonestown, because that's where the massacre occurred in Ghana. And in Summoning Courage and Fighting Back. And to me, any young woman out there that really is watching what's happening, and would be just as furious to hearing what a colleague of her might have gone through in Congress to try and make a complaint against a predator, that, and also is ticked what's happening and realizing again that if there's a problem, we have to fix it ourselves. And she might be thinking of running for office. She might be wondering what it takes, and not necessarily to run for Congress, but to run for the school board, to run, you know, for the county, something in the county, that I think this, I really think the whole story of Jackie Speier and Undaunted is really such an inspirational read. And I know that whoever reads it, you really get a lot out of it. And the kind of character, the kind of obstacles, and the effect of your grandparents and your parents, how that will come through, even though you're actually very different. And you have her grandparents, the ones that came over after the Armenian genocide. That's on her mother's side. But on her father's side, they were German. and that her grandfather was Jewish, and he served heroically in World War I for Germany, and he was wounded and got the highest medal for the German army. But then when the Nazis took over with the Gestapo, her mother, her grandmother was Catholic, and the Gestapo arrested her grandfather, and grandma went down, and she fought very hard, and she said, "You have no right to have this war hero in jail just because he is Jewish." And so she managed to convince them to release Granddad under the promise that they would leave. And so they went to Shanghai, because at that time there was now restrictions to enter Shanghai, so there was quite a little Jewish enclave there of refugees. And then when the war was over, they went back to Germany, but Grandma said, there are these hammer and sickles all over. There's still too many Nazis. So they came to the United States. And luckily for all of us, we got Jackie Speer eventually out of that. And the kind of trials and tribulations she went through have so shaped her character and her life. I think the way they shape most people's lives, really. Maybe most of them had quite such a difficult and arduous time, but that's the kind of character it's going to take right now in Congress. That kind of experience of a Jackie Speer and a Nancy Pelosi with the tremendous passion of an Alexandria or Ocasio-Cortez. And it's also going to take all of us, to really realize that the best we have to be really on the ball. We have to be writing and calling and letting them know what we think is happening. And, you know, the time is now, people. Our democracy, our whole moral character of this country is on the line. And I can only hope that we are up to it. Arlene, you look like you wanted to say something.
Oh, I was just going to fill in when you broke to say that you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View on WMNF Tampa. And as Mary mentioned, Jackie Speer will be coming up, Congresswoman Jackie Speer.
Okay, without further ado, let's put on Jackie Speer. I am so happy to welcome to the show Jackie Speer. Yes, the Jackie Speer, the one we talk about so much when all the cases we've dealt with sexual harassment in the military and other areas. She's a U.S. representative in California's 14th Congressional District. She is recognized, as all of you know, a champion of women's rights, personal privacy, consumer safety, and she's an avowed component of government inefficiency and waste. And you also know her for her hashtag MeToo Congress Act and also in all of that era right now. But the reason we're particularly going to talk to Jackie Speer today is because she has written the most extraordinary autobiography, Undaunted, Surviving Jonestown, Summoning Courage, and Fighting Back. And Jackie Speer, I can't think of a more important and totally necessary book for right now.
Well, thank you, Mary, for having me on and for talking about this book, because it has been a life journey that has taught me lots, and I wanted to share it with a whole new generation of young people, and also for anyone who's encountering trauma and tragedy in their life, because it's a message of resilience that we can overcome virtually anything. And I have found that the secret sauce for me was a combination of family, friends, and faith. Those three elements have been very powerful in my life.
Well, you know, I'm most familiar with you, really, with your work in Congress, particularly fighting for women and, you know, fighting for so many things and your role now in the Intelligence Committee. But, you know, I vaguely knew that you were at the People's Temple, and I thought she was wounded. But I really didn't know much about that, really. I mean, I felt terrible that the congressman was killed, but I really didn't know that much about it, not being from California. And then reading your story, I mean, I think when we're dealing with our lives now, and I'm particularly thinking what a mentor you are going to be to so many young women in Congress, but not just that, young women who maybe think they maybe want to run, but also if they go back and they read your book, here you are, both of your parents are first generation from immigrants. My word, you know, your mom's parents come from the Armenian terrible genocide. But your grandmother also comes out of the Holocaust, if you will, and saved her Jewish husband from the Gestapo, taking him in. And the values that your grandparents and your parents gave you, I think out of those immigrant roots, are so much a factor for you, who you are, whether it was literally the appearance of your grandmother when you are dying on that tamarack from being shot 5 times at point-blank range. I mean, if one wants to see the importance of the strength of immigrants and why they come to this country and their hopes, they need to read your book.
Oh, well, that's nice of you to say, Mary. You know, neither of my parents went to college either. And yet I, in writing the book, I realized that even though they didn't go to college, they instilled in me so many important values that have made me who I am today. And so it was humbling to write this and recognize that I'm really a product of them more so than I thought. I had somehow thought, well, I was so much smarter and had accomplished so much more and was so much more sophisticated. Not true. What I am has everything to do with the extraordinary gifts that they gave me throughout my life. And they were tough. They weren't, soft people necessarily. My father more so than my mom. But they really gave me all the values and tools to survive and to thrive.
Yeah, and I think it really was demonstrated because your mom is really tough. She's a tough woman and she's frugal. And she, but she really realizes what it means to have nothing and how you've got to have something or you will not do anything. And so there she walks to work every day. She saves all of her pennies, etc. And she's a marvelous seamstress, luckily. And I thought it was so appropriate. And to me, it also shows the impact of your mom on your life that, she, as I say, she, her parents came out of the Armenian genocide. And so when you had an opportunity to go back, now I don't know if that's when you were a congresswoman or not, but your mom is so frugal and she's such a wonderful seamstress and she never throws anything away, so she makes these darling little pin cushions out of tuna fish cans and stuff like that. So rather than taking the flowers in the memorial, you actually put one of your mom's pin cushions on that memorial, and I thought that was really appropriate.
Oh, thank you. Well, it was a way of... My mother had then passed, and I went back for the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide as part of the presidential delegation, and I thought, how can I best leave a part of my mom? And so I took back one of the pin cushions.
Yeah, and faith, so important in your life in every way. I mean, we'll get into in just a few minutes the horrendous situation you put up with in Guyana. But there your grandmother, your marvelous grandmother, and she was a very devout Catholic. And I can't imagine if you didn't have the strength and really the love of your faith that you would have survived that whole ordeal and survived the way you do now with all your fearless moral courage.
Well, you are right in assessing that faith played a huge role in my life, has from the very beginning, and helped me through the struggles. I couldn't understand why these bad things kept happening to me, certainly after I had a couple of miscarriages and after my husband was killed in an automobile accident, after a failed adoption. All these things kept happening, and why were they happening? And after my husband died, I think someone sent me, I don't know, I think I counted at one point, I had 20 copies of Why Bad Things Keep Happening to Good People. So that was going to help me get through it. But I did get through it, and it has empowered me because I know that, you know, once you've faced death, once you have been challenged on a very personal level with the loss of your spouse, you learn that you've got more resilience than you think you have, and you come back, and you're able to accomplish things that you didn't think you were able to. And so I think that's the big message of this book, is that, you know, we can overcome so very much in life.
Yeah, you had the courage, actually, after you came back so seriously wounded, and it took great strength for you to survive that. I mean, being shot with an assault rifle at point-blank range 5 times, and the courage you had when you got in the assembly, and you had this pretty uppity congressman saying to you, have you ever fired, you know, a semi-assault rifle? And no, I have not. And so, but you asked him then, have you ever been shot by one of them? And you said, I have. And that was, I'm sure, a very important part of California being progressive and passing that legislation. But then very recently...
Well,
Yeah, but very recently when Congress went on strike after the terrible massacre right here near us in Orlando at the Pulse nightclub, and the Democrats did a sit-in, you got that, you got the FBI then had taken out some of the bullets you had, and one of them was a dum-dum, and you got that out, and you took that to them because you went back, your brother was very sick and had surgery in the hospital. You went back, and you showed them that, and I mean, that is showing a life of reality, and too bad Congress of the United States didn't have the kind of moral courage that they did in California. But it is that kind of connection I saw throughout your whole book, where everything you went through became part of who you were. You used it. You didn't let it destroy you. You used it, and we have all so much benefited.
I think that many of us in Congress and in legislative bodies around the country call upon our personal experiences as we contemplate legislation or consider voting on a particular bill. I mean, it's frankly what makes this country so great, that personal experiences are the what informs us in our decision-making. You know, when my husband was killed in an automobile accident and I had to put together his funeral, I thought, how do people do it who don't have anything at all? And so I made, I passed a law that required proof of auto insurance at time of registration, and also a low-cost auto insurance program in California, so that, you know, everybody would at least have enough coverage for $15,000. That would go a long way in paying for a funeral. So without a doubt, personal experiences do shape how we legislate.
Yeah, and you also, then you knew the experiences when you lose a spouse. You know how that hits one financially. I mean, women are, what, 6 weeks from bankruptcy if they get a divorce or they have that kind of a horrible tragedy. And so then in a legislature, you went after, you know, these kind of deadbeat dads. And I thought it was amazing that if they had any kind of a license whatsoever in California, whether it was a driver's license, a medical license, a law license, or whatever, that if they didn't pay up their what they owed for the, you know, child support, etc., they would lose that license. And I thought, wow, that is really human personal experience being really enforced.
Well, what was amazing about that is that you had a lot of professionals who didn't take seriously their obligation to pay child support, even though it was court-ordered, until they were about to lose their licenses. And in one case, one of the early cases, it was a medical doctor in San Diego who owed $100,000 in back payments of child support. And he didn't get serious about paying it back until he was told he was about to lose his medical license. Over the course of years, that legislation, along with the one with the driver's license and being able to attach repayments of overpayments of taxes, there were billions of dollars of unpaid child support that were returned to families that had not been paid as they should have been. So I'm very proud of that series of bills that was passed. But, you know, it just shows that it's really all about fairness.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a court order, you should comply with that court order. And if you have a child, you should be supporting that child. And sometimes that's lost on people.
And again, we're talking to Jackie Speer, and we're talking about her book, Undaunted, Surviving Jonestown, Summoning Courage, and Fighting Back. Well, you've got a little idea of her summoning courage and her fighting back, but at Jonestown. And I found it the most amazing. And you had real fears. You had really real worries, because People's Temple, Jim Jones, he was kind of a very charismatic, obviously, very impressive speaker, really had a lot of followers. And there were a lot of more in your San Francisco area. And you were for an extraordinary congressman, Leo Ryan, and he really felt that when his constituents had problems, he went hands-on, examined the situation, and then decided what to do about it. But when it came to Jonestown and People's Temple, you had grave reservations of your safety, all of your safety, on that trip, didn't you?
I did, and I had been listening to audio tapes of all of the interviews of former members of the People's Temple, and I made the purchase of a condominium contingent on my surviving that trip. I left a note for my parents in my desk drawer indicating that you know, I had no regrets. They had given me all the love in the world. And so people oftentimes ask me, well, why did you go? And I remind them that it was 1978, and there were few women who had high positions on staffs in Congress at the time. And I thought, if I didn't go, I would be setting back women in terms of their ability to take these jobs, because there was a colleague, a staff member from the committee who was a man who was making the trip. And Congressman Ryan had no concern. He thought he had a congressional shield that would protect him. No congressman had been assassinated abroad until he was assassinated in Jonestown. So I do think the feminine intuition is strong and real, and that we should listen to it.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go through all the details. I strongly suggest you read the book, because it is so powerful. But there, you've gotten back to the plane, and you've realized this has totally gone south, and Jones is really losing it, and you realize just how dangerous he is. And then this tractor, we're pulling this truck, or this thing came, and they opened fire on all of you. You saw Congressman Ryan grievously wounded, and then you played dead for a bit, and then point blank range, you were shot 5 times by a semi-assault gun. And I really thought it was amazing, not only how you survived, but tell me, did you ever tell your grandmother that you assumed you were dying, and you said your act of contrition and expected the light to go out, and it didn't, and then you still, and you were dying in all fairness, did you ever tell your grandmother that she appeared to you, and you loved your grandmother, and you thought, I am not going to put my 86 or 87-year-old grandmother in my, having to do my funeral? Did you ever tell her that?
I did. I did. She was a remarkable woman, and had she been born 50 years later, she would have been representing Congress, not me. She was truly an amazing human being, and she did inspire me. I keep a picture of her on my wall in my office as one of the three people that have truly inspired me. She, Congressman Ryan, and Mother Teresa.
Well, I'm looking at the time, and you have been so gracious with your time, and I'm so glad Leo Ryan, as you said in the book, taught you really how to write, because this is so well written. It is so readable, and I repeat, Undaunted, this is an autobiography we've been talking about, really is an important read for right now if you want to be inspired and want to see how, when the going gets tough, the tough really get going. Jackie Spirit's quite a story. You've got quite a life, and listen, we're expecting great things, particularly from the women in this upcoming Congress. So thank you so much.
Well, I think you're going to see it, too.
Thank you, too,
Mary.
No doubt. Thank you so much. It really was amazing. I'm going to play a little bit, because she didn't talk too much. We didn't talk that much in the interview about Jonestown. And she says that, you know, that it's gotten easier, but still, when she goes back to it, she totally understands that she has PTSD. And still, if she hears loud firecrackers or she gets a, you know, backfire from a car, she will jump. And it goes back to that. And Arlene, I can see you want to say something.
Well, I just wanted to say something from a personal perspective. As many of you know, I've been involved in the Whistleblower Summit for the last quite a few years. I guess it's close to 10 years now. And one of the people that we honored one year for her service to whistleblowers and for her support was Jackie Spear. And she's also been the steam behind the U.S. Forest Service women's latest congressional hearing. We've had those women from the Forest Service in California, the National Forest, on our show. And they've had a significant lawsuit regarding sexual harassment and abuse in the Forest Service, and she has been one of their best supporters. And so just wanted to add that.
And you know, thinking those horrendous fires in California, and can you imagine if you are a woman that there is still enough hostility to your being there, that you have to watch your back as much as you have to watch the fire that you hope is the only thing in front of you? I mean, what is wrong with us? I mean, really, I'm serious. What is the problem? And the women in the military say the same thing. I remember when we interviewed some of them, and they said that they were that if they needed to go to the bathroom at night, and they were you know, wherever they were stationed, they had a latrine, that they were terrified to go out alone to use the latrine. So they got the same kind of containers that, you know, a lot of astronauts use, et cetera, because they were afraid that they would be assaulted in a latrine, and they're in hostile territory. And that's the truth. And that's what Jackie Speier and Nancy Pelosi and the others have fought and fought and fought, and we continue to fight. And I think until we really look at it, and I think all you men out there, because you're the one doing the assaulting on the whole, what's wrong? What is your problem?
You know, I know every year something happens, and I look back. I think about when I was in college and shortly after in the work world, and realized how much sexual harassment was going on and how women, at that time it was only 59 cents on the dollar. Now I believe it's about 78 or 79 cents on the dollar.
Depending on your stick.
Yes. But, you know, that's still not enough for a woman to support a family. And many times she is the one supporting them.
You know, I was going to play a little bit more of her account of Jonestown, but I think I'm looking at the clock and I want to cover some other things. But there was a really interesting interview that she did with Andrea Mitchell, new experienced congressional, one observer, reporter, et cetera, and Jackie involved. And they're talking. This was actually in 16 when Trump was running, and it was just through the Hollywood tape. Remember when he was talking about.
And you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View on WMNF 88.5 FM in Tampa and on the web, WMNF.org.
So let's give a listen to Andrea Mitchell and Jackie Speier.
Congresswoman Jackie Speier, thank you very much for being with us. Well, there's so much to talk about. You've introduced a bill on sexual harassment in the STEM field. You've been a strong advocate. How do you feel about this whole debate and how it's evolved over Donald Trump and the women accusing him now and him claiming that this is all created by the news media?
You know, Andrea, I think all of us who've been in the workplace for any length of time have encountered sexual harassment and sexual assault. And I think the First Lady did an extraordinary job yesterday saying that that's not what this country is about. And it's time for us to take very seriously this issue. Why I've taken the stance on military assault and why we need to deal with that in the military, on college campuses, in academia. And what Donald Trump has presented to us is the perfect case of what goes on when someone feels that they have power over another individual and can take advantage of them. And he was bragging about that on that 2005 tape.
Well, the point just now from A.J. Delgado, from his campaign, a surrogate for him, is that that was just bragging. That was, you know, I guess what they called locker room talk, but hyperbole, said she.
Well, I don't think that we can call that hyperbole when he was very graphic about how he could grab women in their private parts and how he delighted in kissing women just because he was a celebrity and could do it. And, you know, that's the conduct of someone who is a serial predator. And women, for the most part, don't come forward because they feel powerless, they feel demeaned, and it's only when there is some outrageous conduct that they do come forward. I mean, think back to Anita Hill. I remember throwing a slipper at the TV when she was somehow being dismissed by the Judiciary Committee about her complaints of sexual harassment against Clarence Thomas. And at that point, I remember introducing legislation in the California State Legislature to require sexual harassment training by all businesses. And yet, here we are, how many years later, still dealing with that same outrageous behavior.
Jackie Speier, and by the way, I was at those hearings, I covered all of those hearings, and that was Democrats as well as Republicans.
That's correct.
What the Senate was like back in 1991.
And thank goodness it's not like that anymore.
One hopes to be continued. Thank you very much, Congresswoman.
One hopes to be continued. I think that really is what we're all thinking about. And that again, you're listening to WMNF 88.5 Tampa, Florida, and we're kind of doing a summary, we might say, of particularly the excitement of the new Congress being sworn in today, Nancy Pelosi, getting the gavel again, and she is only the second person to serve in that position like that. So anyway, I was listening to Ari Melber this last week, and I thought he had a really interesting discussion. And he was mainly talking to Kimmel Cyrus and Mara Gay, and they were talking about the new women and this Congress. And I really think this is well worth listening to. So let's give a listen to this.
Midterms news developing right now. Democrats now flexing their muscles. They are 6 days away from formally retaking control of the House. And tonight, for the first time, they're revealing they will just refuse to seat a North Carolina Republican amid these ongoing credible allegations of election fraud in that race. It's the latest sign that Democrats are clearly going to act like they're in charge and aren't afraid to show it, confronting Donald Trump with a challenge that, again, he's never had in terms of governing competition in his first 2 years. This House also, we should note, will be led by a record number of women office holders. Most of them happen to be Democrats. And that's something that the expected incoming speaker has been advocating for decades.
We need many more women in Congress. Most of the men who come to Congress are probably in their 30s. My experience is that the women in Congress, including myself, are starting out more in sort of like the 40s and beyond. So it's difficult to build the kind of seniority that it would be if we could come in the 30s, if there was more of an acceptance of women and their families being accepted in Congress and leaving their hometowns to come.
That was demographically true when Pelosi was making her rise, that women had to wait longer and then were punished under the seniority system. She also was, of course, ultimately the first woman to serve as House Speaker. But she's not the only woman, as I'm sure you've heard, making waves in this new Congress. Take Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is just 29 years old and will thus be next week the youngest woman ever sworn into Congress after an election. She's been taking on lobbyists, talking tough. She's joined climate change protesters inside that other woman leader I just showed you, inside incoming Speaker Pelosi's office. And they have different styles. Pelosi has always been comfortable negotiating with any president. She does play an effective inside game. Ocasio-Cortez has said very clearly she will approach this partly as an outsider, and she's explained what she's already doing in Washington through Instagram.
I told the president, as I've said over and over again, this new Congress will be something different from the Congress we have now. It'll be a Congress of transparency. So it'll be about transparency. It'll be about reaching out, extending the hand of friendship to work in a bipartisan way to find common ground.
What happens when you actually check into orientation? You get a swag bag. Look at that. Isn't that so cute? So I jokingly call it a swag bag, but what we actually need as elected officials is very high security data devices. So that's what's inside this bag. So we're here at our new office, and I just realized it's two doors down from Nancy Pelosi. That's her office.
That's her office. Stage whisper. I'm joined by Mara Gay, an editorial board member for the New York Times, and Kim Osorio, a former editor-in-chief of The Source magazine and a TV executive producer. When you look at that, just culturally, what do you think of a young woman who is proudly a woman of color,
using
different technology to speak directly to her constituents and her supporters? It's certainly a new page.
It's a new page. It's necessary. It's about time. Personally for me, because she's from my neighborhood in the Bronx, I believe she was for a younger period of her life from Parkchester, and I'm from that same area. So it feels like she's speaking to me. And even being a younger generation, you know, way younger than me, I won't say how old I am, but she is, you know, we're a social media generation, mm-hmm. and she is right in the thick of that social media generation. So she's able to translate an antiquated politics to her audience, to her supporters. And I think that it is about time that we have someone in there that's able to do that.
Look, it's really exciting. I agree. I mean, I think that people of color, young women, young people, millennials have been underrepresented, especially people who live in cities, which is actually a majority of Americans, but we're actually underrepresented in Congress. And so I think to see a reflection of really our generation and who we are actually in the halls of power is extremely exciting and refreshing. And, you know, I think talk about a power couple, as you said. I mean, combined with Speaker Pelosi, this could, you know, who has a lot of experience, I think that should be respected. This could really be a powerful pair.
I wonder what both of you think about the way that they will relate to each other, because there were attempts initially to do what often happens when underrepresented individuals enter the room, which is say, well, there's maybe one spot or pit them against each other. So far, it's early. That seems to have failed in a constructive way, by which I mean that Cortez is not backing down from policy on pressuring the speaker, but she's also very clearly saying, you're not getting us into that kind of fight. And the expected speaker, Pelosi, I want to show you some of her with Trump, continues to do what she's done, which is say, I'm exercising actual power. She has more experience than the younger members. She understands what it is to deal with a president, including this one, and try to unify a caucus. Let's take a look at her standing up to Trump and then go to both of you on that question.
You know, Nancy's in a situation where it's not easy for her to talk right now, and I understand that, and I fully understand that. We're going to have a good discussion, and we're going to see what happens. But we have to have border security.
Mr. President, please don't characterize the strength that I bring to this meeting as the leader of the House Democrats who just won a big victory.
Ooh, I think we're in for a fun ride. Listen, I think there are a lot of Americans who, whether they're Democrats or not, they know that Donald Trump and the Republicans need and deserve competition. And I think people are very happy that Democrats are actually acting, as you said, as though they are in charge, as though they just came off of a big midterm win. I think seeing women in power from Nancy Pelosi to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and many others, right? There's a critical mass of women, which is exciting, right? It's exciting, but it also means that they can't be pigeonholed because there's so many of them. There are people who are coming from groups that have been underrepresented for, you know, forever in our history. And so it's an exciting time.
It is. I think Nancy being a woman of power, of having traditionally, you know, a lot of us women have struggled in the male-dominated space. Mm-hmm. And Trump needs someone who can stand up to him. And she has the experience and being able, I'm sure, has been challenged so much throughout her career. So she's going to put a foot down. And I think that she will also be able to bridge the gap with Ocasio-Cortez.
Is there something that young people or explicitly men can learn from the way these two women leaders are shaping up the party?
Absolutely. I think as women, we always have to demand respect. When we walk in a room, you know, we know what we're faced with. Mm. And I think both of these women demand respect before they even walk in the room.
Mm-hmm. I also think they're bringing a sense of realism to politics. These are people, at least Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez especially, you know, she talked about not being able to afford another apartment in D.C. until she was paid. She got her congressional salary. I mean, I think that actually reflects the experiences of everyday Americans far more than previous members of Congress. And I just think bringing a sense of that into the halls of power is going to be really important and help represent more Americans.
Mara Gay and Kim Osorio, thank you both for being part.
And indeed, I couldn't agree more. When Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had to wait till she got her first paycheck before she could rent an apartment in D.C., Jackie Speier would also relate to that. When her husband was killed in the automobile accident, and he wasn't as good in finances as she thought he was, and so it, you know, those real experiences mean a lot. And there are so many issues that we'll take, as I say, the best we can give. It really. really, because political parties are challenged as never before, and have they lost contact with the people? And so how do we reestablish a government of, for, and by the people? And one issue that is huge for all of us, and I'm thinking of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her background, but I'm also thinking of Jackie Spear's background and how important the immigrant experience was in her grandparents particularly, and how much it affected her life. And we're looking right now at our border. And actually, Jackie Spear went down over the holidays, and I wasn't able to ask her about that, but she wanted to know if our troops that are stationed down there, who all have pretty good emergency medical training, were they allowed to use that to try and help some of these immigrants? And they are not. They're not allowed to do anything except guard. And so, but I want to play this by another terrific young, but this isn't the first time election for her. This is her second, Pramila Jayapal from Washington, because she has been active in the immigrant issue for years in both Washington and now in Congress. And let's give a listen to her.
Heartbreaking. I met with 174 women in three different groups, what they call three pods, in a federal prison. Shockingly, it's a prison after all. They told me it was the best treatment that they've received in all their time being detained, which tells you something about how they were treated in ICE and Border Patrol custody. These are women, the vast majority of whom are seeking asylum, trying to escape rape and violence and murder. One woman from El Salvador had her eldest son shot. Her second son had been, her eldest son was shot and killed. Her second son was shot and paralyzed. And she took her final child to try to bring him to the United States for safety. Story after story like this, Chris. And these women were forcibly separated from their children at the border. You mentioned, being told that they were being taken for a bath. Similar kinds of stories where a woman was taken out to get her photograph taken to these mass prosecutions in these criminal courts that they've set up where they're prosecuting 75 to 100 women at a time, and then came back and found that there was no child there anymore. Not a one of them had been able to say goodbye to their children. Jesus. And none of them knew where their children were. None of them had spoken to their children. They had literally been in detention, probably about 40 to 50% of them, for more than a month in four or five facilities. These were all individuals who were transferred mostly from the Texas border. They hailed from 16 different countries. They were sitting in a room next to the room where their child was being held in some cases, and they could hear the children screaming for their parents. It was absolutely heartbreaking. And their treatment in the ICE and Border Patrol facilities was just outrageous. I have worked on immigration issues for 20 years, and this is about as bad as I've seen it. In many cases, they were not given water to drink for 5 days. They had a sink in their cell, and that water was dirty, chlorinated water, and that's the only thing they had to drink. One woman said that she was hit twice by Border Patrol right here, just below her eye on her cheekbone. Many of them talked about these facilities that they have nicknames for. One nickname is the ice box, because the temperatures are so cold that they liken it to a freezer. Some of these women had crossed the Rio Grande, come out of the river wet to turn themselves in, and were immediately put into these freezing facilities. No blankets, no mats. Another facility they call the dog pound, because it is filled with cages, like kennels, which is where they were held. And Chris, I just have to tell you, it was heartbreaking. Every time they talked about their children, they wept. They are strong, courageous women escaping rape, gang violence, murder, political persecution, coming to the United States. They want to do this legally. They have not yet had what is called a credible fear hearing, which is what determines whether or not you get asylum.
I just want to be clear on that, because this is a little technical point, but have they had anyone do a first pass with them on credible fear?
No, they had not had any credible fear hearings, and most of them had not seen an attorney. And in fact, I was very surprised that I was allowed in. The warden was great to me. The prison staff were really good to me, much better actually than sometimes my dealings with ICE. But you know, I was able to ask them if they wanted an attorney, and we took down over 100 names of women who wanted to see an attorney in order to then give it to our partners, the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project, so that they could connect with them and at least get them some legal resources. Some of the women had been given these little slips of paper, white slips of paper, that had their name and then their kids' names. And one woman said to me, these are not my children. The names that were listed on the paper were not even her children.
And again, that's Pramila Jayapal, congresswoman from Washington. And we have enormous problems. And we have to be up to the task. Anne Arlene?
There is so much more for us to learn and so many things to cover in the coming weeks. But we have had several calls today from people who enjoyed or found this Jackie Speer interview interesting, and they wanted me to repeat the name of her book, Undaunted, by Jackie Speer. And her last name is Speier. And I've posted that on our Facebook page, Bulletin Board WMNF, and on my page, so you can check it out there.
And you have been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Take it easy, people, but take it. You've never been more necessary.